to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
One more break, stocks and jacks. Out to Mally. Mr. Brett Weber on the board. S&P futures up 22 points. NASDAQ futures up 71. Dow futures up 167 as we start November giddy. We have the Fed meeting tomorrow and Tuesday, which could be interesting, or, you know, could be a, they could say all the, quote, right things, Matty. It's not a question of what you do, it's what you say. Right now, this is a different world where one of these days I'll figure out we're in a different world, you know. I'm slow at this, but I'm gaining on it, you know. This is where we, you know, we worry about, all weekend as I drove the expressway a few times with guys running by me 105 miles an hour, I never saw a squad car. Yet we probably are installing even more camera. How do we get in the camera business? Just saying, you know, I mean, why aren't we one of these guys that have the, gets to wet his beak every week? Like, let's have more cameras, no policemen. Then there's a big group that's unhappy with the city budget because we actually had a lady on the other day and talking about how we should have more money for mental health and education and we should take it all out of the police budget. Maddie, I want that person to drive the Ryan. I want them to just drive around one of these neighborhoods on a Friday or Saturday night and tell me how, what kind of an idea that is. We have serious, I don't know, I won't say they're issues, but there's stuff going on here that I just don't quite get. Do you?
There's a lot going on that I don't get.
Yeah, so let's worry about more about sports. College. This is gonna be an interesting year. Who do you think is gonna come out? Who's leading the Big Ten West now? Minnesota?
Let me look. I think there's probably a tie. Pulling up the Big Ten standings. So right now Minnesota is a 4-1 in the division, 6-2 overall, and then you have three teams with two losses, Wisconsin, Purdue, and Iowa, and then you have and then it gets bad after that. Illinois is 2-4, Northwestern's 1-4, Nebraska's 1-5.
Okay, who did Northwestern beat?
Good question.
They must have beat like Rutgers or somebody.
So, the Big Ten West is not very good, it would appear, and
or they're all good. Parity.
Northwestern beat in Rutgers, and apparently that's it in the conference.
And the other side is who? Michigan's lost.
Yeah, well, the other side, you have Michigan State and Ohio State are both undefeated at 5-0 in the conference.
Do they have to play each other?
That I don't know. You're asking me Big Ten questions without telling me to prepare for Big Ten. Yeah, they do play each other, actually.
Well, it's your own fault. You've been in an encyclopedia of sports as I've known you. I could ask you any question. You know the answer.
Well, I can still find it very quickly. But Ohio State, after their early loss, second game of the year versus Oregon, obviously a non-conference loss, they are undefeated since, including beating Penn State on Saturday, which was a solid win. Now they go at Nebraska, where they'll be heavily favored, versus Purdue, where they're heavily favored. But then they finish versus Michigan State at home and then at Michigan. And those are going to be two tough ones.
What happened to Penn State all of a sudden? They have injuries, or they just weren't that good to start with?
They did lose their starting quarterback for a little while. He's back, but they haven't really recovered from that. I can't explain how they lost that game to Illinois at home. I'll never be able to explain that. They, after a 5-0 start, they've lost 3 in a row.
Yeah, losing to Illinois is a bad day.
Yeah, I mean, when you you lose at Iowa, you lose at Ohio State, you can justify those two losses. Losing at home to Illinois, you can never justify that. I mean, that's just
I don't think losing to Illinois and playing at Mars, you ever justify that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this coach turning anything around down there, you think, or no?
Well, it's his first year, so you definitely would need to give him some time. It's not like Lovey left the cupboard full by any means. But I mean, they have a couple wins. I mean, they beat Nebraska, which was, you know, Nebraska's not very good, but it's still a win. They beat Rutgers, which is a conference win, and then their big win is winning at Penn State. So I would say that's progress right there, that the fact that they have three wins and two, and, you know, in the conference is, pretty spectacular. Considering how bad they were, but yeah, they're not a bowl team this year, and they got a lot of work to do to get there.
What, every team, you know, I listen to some of them on the radio, drive around all the time. It is astounding me the amount of people. It has to be, you know, one of the reasons why Alabama obviously is still going to be real good, and who knows, they might still win a national championship.
Still very well could. They're positioned well now. They're going to be back in the top two or three here, based on some other teams losing, and they'll have a chance to play Georgia in the conference championship game, right? Or are they in the same side? I don't even know.
That I'm not sure. But the
I can find that out too.
As you look, you know, one of the things, I don't even know, of course, who knows if you, when you get the whole paper anymore, but I always used to look, man, at the end of there was some guy would publish a summary of the NFL, like in, I'll say like June or something, before training camp. They'd list all the teams and they'd say who they lost and who they got. How's that for Southside? And you could always see that the really good teams, because everybody, like, seemingly, well, they had a lot of good players, but they also seemingly over can't pay everybody or whatever it is, and you'll see the good teams always, like, lost a bunch of people and picked up a few people. Not all the time. I mean, some of the teams are pretty good at the good teams. Like, that's why New England was there for a long time, and a few of them seem to stay even. But then you'll see the crummy teams where there's a lot of jobs available, and they have usually money available, unless you're Detroit where they got no good players and no money. Where you end up picking up eight guys and losing three guys. And you can just tell every year that the thing is somewhat designed, or rather it landed the way that there's almost a parity thing on its own. In this college ball, I really wonder if this incredible ease of the transfer portal, and I don't know the difference, maybe it's a Kevin question, or maybe your question, as to how much that's gonna tighten up after the COVID crap leaves. But every team, I've watched probably five or six teams that have transfers from Alabama. So I'm not so sure that they're having as much success at finding a way to pack 95 guys somewhere on the team, even only 85 have scholarship and 10 are hiding someplace. I think they're having trouble doing that. I think they're losing some of their depth because people would rather start somewhere else than hang around at a junior college in Alabama, I think. So, I mean, you see these teams, you know, teams you've never heard of have got an Alabama guy in there or some other guy in there. I mean, I got to believe this third-string quarterback for the Irish. If I'm him, I'm out of there. And for some reason, Kelly doesn't like the guy. And he's all over this freshman who's playing even when he shouldn't be now, I don't think. I mean, not that he's not good enough, but, I mean, so the third-string guy who actually saved their behind that one game, it looks to me like he's got a real quick release and everything. He's never going to see the light of day because Kelly doesn't want him showing up his prized freshman. So that guy, he should be out of there. You know, I'm sure there's a million people in minor league baseball who feel the same way. But there's the way this is working out or not working out or whoever is playing out, how's that for the term, in college ball, it's almost like there's, you know, it's going to increase the parity across the way. So Illinois might actually be able to, even though I don't think Champaign is a destination place by any means, they might actually be able to come back a lot quicker if you can play this new game. I think it's a different game than the original recruiting, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's something to that. I mean, I don't know the inner workings of Notre Dame or Illinois, but yeah, there's certainly something to that.
Well, I mean, right now, I got to believe one of the most valuable hires, if there is such a thing, I always thought that I should register as a guy who's an expert on extraterrestrial activity. So when the saucer lands in front of the White House, they'll have to hire me the next day as an expert. Even though there is no way you can be an expert, but right now I think an expert and knew a lot of people at all these schools and somehow could find information on people who wanted to transfer. I mean, once you go in the portal, I think everybody can contact you, right? But I think that scouting other people's teams right now is a huge deal. I mean, you probably have some good of an idea how some kid was in high school, especially if you liked him. But how you keep track of him and figure out that the next year he's grown and he's done the workouts and all the other stuff. I mean, that kind of information has got to be invaluable right now, don't you think?
Sure.
How do you even get it, you suppose?
How do you get what?
And how would somebody be an ex? I mean, how would I know if a guy that I sort of liked and I wanted to get him at Notre Dame, say, but he went to Michigan State and I don't see him playing. All of a sudden, he enters a
what
transfer.
You don't see him playing.
I mean, I don't see him. He's not playing for Michigan State.
Oh, he hasn't played in any games.
He's buried in the system.
But you liked him in high school.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, but it's now a year or two later, now I see his name in the transfer portal. How do I find out, unless he starts publishing the stuff himself, you know, what he's doing in the 40, what he's lifting?
Once he's in the transfer portal, you can find out all of that.
How?
I mean, you call him and have him come work out for you.
Oh,
or
he can
go see him. Oh, he's in the transfer portal.
Right, so but that means
he's now neutral. He's now open for recruitment.
Can he pull himself out of there and go back for the other place?
Yes, if the other place still wants him.
So you can essentially put your car for sale and pull it back.
Yeah, off. Kofi Coburn, the star center for Illinois basketball, he did that at the end during this last offseason. He put him. You know, they were losing some guys to the NBA draft and. And he put himself in the transfer portal. He also entered his name into the draft and then found that he probably wasn't going to be picked as high as he hoped. So he put his name in the transfer portal, and people at Illinois freaked out, and rightfully so, thinking he was going to transfer because Kentucky and UCLA and big schools like that are poaching the Big Ten, you know, sort of medium schools left and right. And he ended up deciding to go back to Illinois, and you can do that.
All right, so...
But he wanted to see sort of where his value was since he didn't like where it was in the NBA. He wanted to see where it was in college, and he probably took some meetings and worked out for some people, but decided he'd rather just stay home.
All right, so in today's world, that just conjures up an amazing amount of potential, I don't know what you want to call it, Matty. I'm going to get this straight now. In the last... couple of years, the Supreme Court has said people can essentially sell their likeness to anybody, and they could also essentially get rid of any rule where an alumni can pay people, an alumnus, correct?
I mean, that's not the idea, but I'm sure that happens.
Well, but I mean, that's the result. That's how dumb our Supreme Court is. I'm not saying it was a bad decision. What I'm saying is I don't know if they know the full ramifications, right? So
you never do when you change.
Well,
rule.
People can have a half a brain.
There's always unintended consequences to anything do. Then there's also usually some unintended good things that happen too.
Okay. So what I'm saying is,
as now people can do whatever they want, as they should be able to do. It's a free country. You should be able to make money if you want to.
All right.
Simple as that.
So. People should get
that's
paid.
That's it. End of story. People should be able to make money.
So people should, no matter
what it
is. I
think in this America, if you're not breaking the law, yeah.
All right,
I don't give a rat's ass about some office in Indianapolis that calls themselves the NCAA that has no law power at all. I couldn't care less what they think. As long as kids aren't breaking the law, they should be able to make money. Anyone should. I don't care if you're 11 doing a lemonade stand or you're 21 selling an autographed picture of yourself.
Okay.
Why would you care? You've been a capitalist your whole life.
I understand that, and I think
doesn't sound like you do.
I think things should be. I don't like the idea that people essentially get banned from the industry 1 year and then it's okay the next year. I don't get the morale.
I don't either. The rules should have never been what it was, in my opinion. All right,
so
they changed it.
All right, so let me get this straight. It's okay with you, for you, if the center of Illinois. Now we seem to have boosters all over the place that have no brains. Or somehow feel that theirs grows an inch whenever their team wins or something. So the center from Illinois, I'm not accusing him of anything. He puts himself in the portal. He essentially puts himself up for auction. So now if you're a law firm in downtown Springfield, you say, I don't want this kid leaving. So you're going to see, you say, I'll tell you what, I'll pay you $20,000 to be a temp for the summer. By the way, you don't have to show up 1 day a week. Kid goes, okay. When he pulls himself off the portal. That's okay with you?
I mean, does it change my way of life? No,
no, it doesn't either. But
I couldn't care less. I mean, okay, that's totally fine with me.
So you're okay with that all over the place?
That doesn't bother me at all.
All right, so I'm just saying,
people
being
getting jobs and internships and favors inside and outside of college sports forever.
I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying that if we're going to let this thing be totally wide open, you can pay all these guys. Let's get away from the fact that they're students. Let's start taxing everybody. Let's make sure that we tax the tickets, University of Illinois, for the state.
Fine with that, too.
I am, too. I'm just saying, once you go down this road, you can't go halfway, is what I'm saying.
And they may find that they can't go halfway, because I think they're sort of trying to go halfway right now. And they may find that they can't go halfway. And I'm with you.
Because, I mean,
they're making so much money, it drives me nuts. I feel the same way about the churches, too. I'd tax all of these organizations.
Well, some churches are, some churches aren't.
Well, when I see that the billions of dollars that they can pay in lawsuits, I know they got money. our government doesn't.
I don't see how the people who contribute the next Sunday pay for something 40 years ago before they were even born.
Well, I don't love that either. Same for when the city gets sued for some sort of police malfeasance or otherwise that happened 20 years ago, and then we have to pay for it now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not ideal, but that's the system we have, I guess.
Well, the jury system, somehow, if it's not their money, you know. But this has gone on for, you know, forever. When people used to, you know, when people bombed cities in World War II, there was some sort of a bizarre idea that if you beat up on the citizens someplace, that somehow or another they were going to be able to overthrow Hitler. Okay, I mean, if you, and we even have it now. We're so stupid collectively that if we find a corporation without throwing the people and the board and the management out of there, that somehow the shareholders have the power to throw these people out, and yet the SEC is dead set against anybody running from the outside for any of these boards. So that the whole thing breaks down. If you think, but I just wonder. I mean, are we really ready? For every team, as soon as guys put themselves in the transfer portal, that some booster pops up and increases their pay at the school they're at, and they pull themselves out. I mean, are we ready for the thing for that to happen 500 times a year? I don't know if I am or not. I mean, I guess you're right. It doesn't matter to me much.
Doesn't matter to me either. By the way, Kevin says there is plenty of data available about every player's physical development as it changes with time in the program. Every box score, game by game, participation lists, depth charts, recruiting commitments, etc., is publicly available, which probably helps other schools do this recruiting once they enter the transfer portal. He says the analytics field is about gathering that data, organizing it, and making it easily available to coaches and recruiting coordinators. As soon as a player makes himself available, the particulars are a query away. I'm sure there are predictive models showing likely transfers as well.
I'm going to say bull, Kevin. He's right. All that stuff should be out there. But my point is you're trying to find somebody who the other team doesn't like and who's developing and is good. So they're not playing, you're probably not being heard of. And they're probably not even practicing that much. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
Well, you're not going to have, if in the example that you're given, and typically most of these transfers have played.
Yeah.
But the example you're given where a guy has not seen the field, and because of that wants to transfer, which that certainly happens too, you're probably leaning a lot more on where are they in the depth chart, who is in front of them. I really liked them in high school.
Yeah, I'm sure.
How much weight have they gained? You know, what does their muscle look? You know, what their weight? What are they doing in the weight room? Because I'm sure all that's available too.
Well, now you're wandering down the line here. Okay, so I know that let's say for instance. Thomas isn't playing on the softball team. You know, every way you can. The only time he plays is when you can't find a ninth guy off the street, right? But on the other hand, Thomas might be practicing every week. Is it okay for your buddy, Jeffy, your assistant coach, for me to call him and say, what's the story with Thomas? Oh yeah, Matty just kind of unlike the guy. He's doing really well. Now do you want him telling me that? Do I get to talk to your employee? There's a lot of rules here that does your coaches give reports on and to another, to essentially an agent who these guys aren't supposed to hire, or maybe they are now. Oh, you can hire marketing agents, you still can't hire regular agents, right? Now, if anybody can tell me the difference between the two, you know, they're a better man than me. Because I'm using sports, Manny, as a way to, every time you make a rule, you do something, there's a million other things you didn't think of, right? And we're doing the same thing in
business.
There's
no doubt about that. We always find that.
But, I mean, we're getting mature enough as a society that somebody in a Supreme Court, somebody in an office, somebody in business, you should have some idea of what it is you're doing and what is going to happen. I mean, that's what I... I mean, one of the things that, you know, I don't know, who knows what they teach these days, it's been so long. But the University of Chicago, in some of the classes, that was actually, that was all the assignments. Here's a simple decision, one way or the other. And I took several tests like this. Here's a simple decision, here's your three possible, policy changes you can make. Pick one of them, and follow it all the way through for the next 5 years, all the ramifications of what you just did. Does anybody even think about that anymore?
I would like to think they do, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, these are all kinds of questions. Now, if you find out that your staff, you know, does what's his name, the coach of Alabama,
Nick Saban?
Nick Saban. Does he have a rule that says if any of you bleeps talk to any of these agents about our guys, you're fired? Can he do that?
I don't know. Good question.
I mean, if I find out you know, whoever, one of the guys on your softball team was able to call a guy on my team or a coach on my team and find out that this guy is really doing great and he should be starting anywhere else, but we just don't have a spot for him. You're fired. Can I do that? Can I write it into your contract now? Is it part of a standard contract that you can't talk to people? Or what about Facebook? Do I have to watch your Facebook? Do I have to do this? This information is worth money.
Well, I can tell you by rule, you're not supposed to talk to anybody until they're actually in the transfer portal. Now, is that broken every day? Probably, especially in how we know how dirty college recruiting is. But by rule, you can't talk to other teams' players until they go through the process and enter themselves into the transfer portal. Then, absolutely. And at that point, in my opinion, if a kid puts himself or herself in the transfer portal, then you should promote them because it's a 19 or 20-year-old kid. And get them a spot where they can play. And you should say, hey, they're doing great in practice. You're going to love them. They have a great attitude. Or, you know, they're a little rough around the edges, but if at your program, maybe they could get more time. We happen to have a couple guys in front of them. And so you would think you would talk positively about it.
In a perfect world, I'm with you. Where are we going to find that place?
But we know that's not how it goes. I mean, I can tell you firsthand because I follow the Iowa program closely. In basketball, CJ Frederick. So Iowa was a top five team last year in basketball, and they were a number two seed in the NCAA tournament and ended up losing in the second round, got upset by Oregon, who went on a deep run. Oregon had like four NBA players on their team and they were very much, underseeded. But be that as it may, Iowa's starting shooting guard, who was, the Mr. Basketball in the state of Kentucky. But was a, you know, 6'5" white guy, and so he definitely wasn't recruited by Kentucky. So Iowa gets him, CJ Frederick, really good player, and his dad actually played at Notre Dame. Had a really good first redshirted his first year, then had a really good redshirt freshman year, really good redshirt sophomore year. And then all of a sudden, he transfers to Kentucky, and Coach McCaffrey at Iowa was furious because he knew that Kentucky had been recruiting him the whole time, even though he hadn't been in the transfer portal yet. And once he put his name in the transfer portal, he literally was like in Kentucky clothes like 6 hours later. It was like a done deal. So yes, does Coach Calipari and the like talk to guys absolutely before they're in the portal? Of course they do.
I think the bid was already made. The salary was already there.
It was already there. They cleared a spot. They saw him get better. They needed shooting, and so they said basically. And of course, is probably the kid's dream school, playing, you know, where he's from. So I don't fault him necessarily, but that's how it goes.
I hope these kids. I just hope that these kids are all paying tax on this stuff. And not, in one of these days, we're not going to see 30 of them go to jail for tax evasion.
I can tell you, when I was 21, I didn't know much about that And I think these guys are getting educated. I know the good programs that have embraced the NIL and gotten ahead of it and, you know, are probably using it to help recruit kids. I think they have a whole sort of program and, that goes into the taxes and goes into, the accounting of it all, and they really educate them on it. Now, does the kid follow through on it? I don't know, but I think the schools are probably getting ahead of that.
Well, how does it mean? Well, the PTI, I guess if I ever wanted to do that, I suppose it's nobody's business because it's my firm or my brother's firm, or you know, people work here are all part of it. I guess I can do that if I wanted to pay your son, you know, $20,000 for the summer to not show up, like a union job in New Jersey or someplace, and that to not show up, and I, you know, I give you a W, 1099 or whatever, or W-2, and I do that, and I deduct it and make sure that I deduct from you. I guess it's okay, but are they, are these schools going to be able to check these kids' tax return to find out who's paying them? Should they even know? Or is it not even their business?
Well, it's a good question. I don't think it's their business. I think, ultimately, the kid is going to have to, or his parents, or you know, whoever, if depending upon their age and all that stuff. I don't know how long you can claim someone. Can you claim someone when they're in college?
I think you can. Yeah.
Yeah. So it might be through it might be their parents that are doing it. But I just think the school's job is to educate them on everything that goes into this. You know, this is how you have to account for it. This is how you have to file. This is your tax information. And send them reminders. And is your parents doing this? Then, you know, let us know. So whatever. But ultimately, I agree. I don't think it's their business to actually, like, see the tax documents or anything.
Okay,
like that.
So, I know we only have a minute, but maybe we can talk about this with Jan too. Now, in my business, the regulatory group has decided that whoever you're hired by, say PTI, has to control your entire 24/7. Which I am vehemently opposed to, but that I don't seem to get a vote. So they want you to know everything that somebody does on the outside, and if you don't okay it, it's essentially cause for dismissal. So if you go to work for Schwab or somebody, you cannot have an outside job, and they find out you do, they're going to fire your ass. So do I have an obligation, now the Supreme Court being as ignorant as they can be, do I have an obligation to let Illinois know that PTI is paying me over the summer?
Good question.
See how we get into the detail is where a lot of people get in trouble and so forth on this meeting?
Absolutely.
I mean, now when you lob that one out there, you ought to be able to sell your likeness. I get it. I'm with you. You never get an argument out of me out of that. Now, what about all this other stuff? Well, we haven't thought of that. Well, that's a problem, right?
I mean, I never said they haven't thought of it. I think they have thought of it.
Okay, so if I were to ask one of the Supreme Court justices regarding who has to notify who, does a team have to know, not know, they would explain this to me?
Good question. I don't know. I don't think there should be any rules on any of that. I think people should be able to make money.
All right, so
whatever they want.
So Illinois should.
I think you should too.
Illinois shouldn't know that a booster is paying their center in basketball $100,000 a year.
I didn't say that. I think there's rules for any sort of payment. There's a certain amount of money you can give as a gift. There's tax code for all of this.
I'm saying, but do I have to notify the university?
Whatever the tax code is.
There is no tax code.
I don't know if you do have to notify.
Well, I mean, the FINRA says they have to notify.
You're paying the person. You're not paying the school.
I'm saying is we have the same governmental organization making decisions that are totally conflicting all over the place, which
is a problem. Well, there's no doubt in your business there's a lot of rules I don't understand.
S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 64. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 63. John, I hope you're here to save Maddie. Cause I was talking too much about detail because detail is what ends up killing a lot of ships, right, Maddie? The detail. Did you guys make sure you brought enough oil to make this across the ocean? No, we didn't. I guess we got a problem.
I'm as befuddled as Matt.
So I'm befuddling everybody? Therein lies the rub. I mean, what do you do with all this stuff? I mean, when people make these kind of changes. Dow Futures up 166. The thing that actually caught my eye on this whole mess was, over in Europe, the DAX up 114.7%, FTSE up 31.4%, CAC around up 55.8%. We're bullish across the globe here today on November 1st. Nikkei up 754, 2.6%. Not sure why that is. They've been flying around up 2% and down 2%, seemingly without any tangible reason. Shanghai down two points at flat. Hang Seng down 222. That's almost 1%. So we're starting to see these kinds of days where Nikkei is totally different. They were down huge last week one day when the other guys were up. It's kind of crazy. Bonds right where they've been. They're actually up 3 basis points on the 10-year. It's right back to 1.59, which pretty much was all last week. So we're kind of right back where we were. The Bund minus 0.08, which is, it's up 7 basis points. This is as close to zero as we've been in a long time. And we've got Japan still at positive 0.09. We've got oil up 20 cents, 83.77. We got Brent up 50 cents, 84.22. So still at the high end of the range. Natural gas down 8 cents, 5.33. RBOB up 2 cents to 2.39. I paid, how did I pay, Manny? 338 or something in the burbs. So better in the city, but still getting up there. Actually, no, it's 343. A gold up 60 cents, 1784. Still can't get through that 1800-hour number. Silver down 6 cents, 2388. Copper down a penny at 435. And we've got Bitcoin up at 1300 bucks to 62,083. Still not at the 63 level was last Monday. But it dipped during the week, and now it's heading back up again. Betty, we have for us traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Looks like we're off to a pretty good start here on a Monday morning. No delays on the Edens or Kennedy. We do have some traffic build up on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Southside expressways are looking good, as is Lakeshore Drive. Out in the suburbs, the expressways are quiet out there too. But we do have some crashes off of the expressways. Looks like out west there's a crash at US 20 and Arlington Drive. And then just south of there, Army Trail Road at Gary Avenue, there's an accident. And then down in Wheaton, there's a crash at Naperville Road and Roosevelt Road. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, we'll have some sunshine, but cold, blustery temperatures. You'll find that's the theme this week. We should dry out a little bit, but it'll be cold. Today, partly cloudy skies with a high of just 47. It'll be windy, so it'll feel like it's in the 30s, which doesn't help. Right now, it's clear and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 84 today. Right now, it's clear and 64. In sports, the Bears fell again yesterday. In spite of having a lead for big portions of the game, they lost at home to San Francisco 33-22, dropping to 3-5 on the NFL season. Justin Fields was solid if you factor in his rushing yards. He was 19 of 27, 175 yards, one touchdown, one interception. But he also carried the ball 10 times for 103 yards and a touchdown, including a fourth and one sort of broken play scramble that turned into a 22-yard score that would have tied the game at the time had the kicker made the extra point, which, of course, he didn't. But that was a big highlight. But the defense just couldn't get a stop in the second half. Jimmy Garoppolo torched them along with Elijah Mitchell and the Niners running game. And the Bears were outscored 24-9 in the second half, and that was the difference. Bears now 3-5. They'll play again next on Monday Night Football at Pittsburgh. Sunday Night Football, it was the Cowboys and backup quarterback Cooper Rush outlasting Minnesota on the road 20-16 in an exciting game there in Minneapolis. NBA basketball, the 5-1 Bulls were off last night. They're back in action tonight in Boston. A big one with the Celtics. That's a 6:30 Chicago time tip-off. Looking forward to that. Blackhawks were off as well. They'll host the Senators tonight at the UC. That's a 7 p.m. Central time puck drop. Coyotes played last night. They lost to the Hurricanes 2-1. Chief.
Jan, how are you?
Todd, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing good. By the way, it was good seeing you the other night at Lachette's. Oh, yeah, you were a no-show. Oh, that's right. Well, we had
you were looking at that plastic cutout of me, Tom.
Yeah, Manny had to go out and get a cardboard cutout for him and just stick in the spot when he's...
He's keeping the back of the truck.
Yeah, put it right there.
When you go inside.
Actually, I should put it in the back of the truck because, you know, he looks pretty fearsome. You know, my guys maybe won't shoot at me or something.
There you go.
That's the nicest thing anybody said about me in a long time.
I've made some, you know, as my mother used to say, smart-ass comments about... When things are giddy about investing, which they are now, you know, everybody knows that's my job, man, is I'm a money manager and I put people's money to work every day, but I hope I'll be doing it. But obviously I'm very concerned at what I consider to be the levity in the market, which is brought on by the Federal Reserve. But every once in a while I make a half-assed comment about, you know, if I told people to buy turtle eggs in Rwanda because they were up yesterday, they'd go buy them, and I think everybody says, well, this guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. But here's a article printed by, or written by Ryan Brown. This is spectacular. I mean, I'd love to have him on the show. Do you ever heard of a Facebook a cryptocurrency called Mana, Manny?
I don't think I have heard of that one.
A little-known cryptocurrency spikes 400% after Facebook changed its name to Meta. A little-known cryptocurrency, Mana, surged to an all-time high over the weekend amid excitement over Facebook changing its name to Meta. They're not exactly even. I don't know where this is going. Mana is the native digital token of Decentraland, a self-proclaimed metaverse platform where users can buy and sell virtual properties. What the hell is a Jan, you're our title expert. What exactly is a virtual property?
Well, it doesn't sound too tangible to me.
Well, that's the name, virtual.
It's not fish, fowl, land, air rights. Virtual to me, property means non-existent to me.
Crypto investors view Facebook's rebrand as a sign of growing acceptance of the metaverse trend. All right, Maddie, what exactly is the metaverse trend?
I don't know why you're asking me this.
You're our youngest one here. What can I tell you?
Yeah, but I'm not exactly young. I've never played in a metaverse.
You'll always be young to me, Matty. How's
that?
Yeah.
Well, yes. So is dirt. But yeah. That was a shot. But No, I need to do more research on this because there's been a lot of parody videos I've been watching over the last few days making fun of this whole thing. So I need to learn more about it. But I assume this is some sort of virtual reality online where you can similar to a couple years ago when people were searching for those Pokemon things.
Yeah.
Remember that was all the craze? That's sort of this alternate reality that's virtual, and I'm sure you can acquire property in these metaverses, and I'm sure you can, just like you can pay for tokens and different things like that in these games, and that kids were running into that issue, or I guess their parents were, when their credit cards were getting charged so they could buy new sort of weapons or toys in whatever game they were playing. I'm sure you can buy property too in these virtual metaverses. And, you can go to war with your enemies and whatever you want. That's my high-level guess. I'm going to have to do more
research. Well, now that you're aging, I'll have to tell you, you snooze, you lose. The thing went from a buck. Where does stuff even trades in a weekend? I have no idea. It went from a buck to 416. You could have quadrupled your dough. And here you are telling me how you're too old to know this stuff.
I'm out of touch in the metaverse, apparently.
The price of mana...
Even though me and Zuckerberg, I think, are the same age.
You guys are attached at the hip. The price of mana hit an all-time high of 416 on Saturday evening. Where the bleep is this thing trade on Saturday evening? According to CoinMarket...
He's actually younger than me, by the way.
Really? Up 400% from where it was trading shortly after... I wouldn't want him as my producer.
We graduated the same year, but he's like... looks like about 9 months or 8 months younger than me. Anyway, go ahead.
I guarantee you he does not have a significant other as nice as you do.
Well, I've never met his significant other. She does a lot of philanthropic work, though.
Whatever. I mean, Jan, Maddie and Jill came to Dan's apple-squeezing party, and what is she, 5 months?
She's 6 months pregnant.
She looks absolutely spectacular, and as pleasant as ever. You got a winner there, buddy. I don't know. She must have dropped in your lap because I can't believe that you actually. Well, you must have picked her, obviously. Anyway, the price of mana hit an all-time high of 416. Was that a nice enough group we had Saturday?
That was as always. It was fun.
So they're trying to talk my brother into getting on a pool team. I said you were a horrible pool player. He goes, yeah, I know. They're just short a guy. The price of mana hit an all-time high of 416 on Saturday evening, according to CoinMarketCap data. Up 400% for what was trading shortly after Facebook announced it was changing its name to Meta. It has fallen since. So you could have bought it at a buck, man. He shorted it at four, and now bought it back at 316. You'd be all over this thing. Facebook's rebrand was aimed at shifting the embattled social media's company focused toward Metaverse, a kind of shared virtual reality in which multiple users can interact with each other in digital objects. What are these people talking about? Digital assets have been tracked. Ownership of the land is purchased through non-fungible tokens, a type of digital asset meant to track who owns what, or doesn't own what. It runs on Ethereum, the blockchain network behind Ether, the world's second largest digital currency. Maddie, are we educating the world here, or are we confusing the hell out of people?
I think we're educating them. I think this is actually kind of how I described it.
It is. It's a vote of confidence among both speculators and investors that this concept of a metaverse is now taking a serious turn in favor of reaching mainstream consciousness and soon adoption.
Well, it's a lot easier to get virtual chicks than real ones, I bet.
Yeah. I bet you can get the ones that... They still sell the ones that the blow-up ones?
I'm sure they do. They're probably more realistic than ever.
Do they come with different color wigs? So if you just only need one of them, and you can change.
Of course.
So people think of all kinds of different girlfriends?
Absolutely.
This is bizarre world. But this is what happens when there's too much money in the system. Like, just saying. Speaking of which, John, what we've been, we've talked a little bit, and this week we're gonna kind of go through it, firsthand. What exactly is going to? Where do you think the real finances of these cities are right about now? Is it something that's going to affect the market? I mean, right now it appears that the city of Chicago and a lot of cities and maybe states have been dumped an awful lot of money from the federal government as part of these various COVID things. So I think they probably got essentially bought their way through this year, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they plugged enough holes in the budget with federal money, that they may be able to save their bond rating for a while, keep investors placated. I don't see it as a long-term thing. How could it be? But I think they may have dodged a bullet. We'll have to see. But the trouble, to me, it's now such a question of how this money is going to be allocated, and what are the pressure points, and what are the things that really need addressing. And I just don't see this city council and this mayor getting their head around what's really important. And they're no different from any other, governing bodies in big cities everywhere else too. I think they're all in the same boat. This is a system about to crash and burn, I think. I think we're kind of witnessing the final agonies of it, but I don't see any of these cities with the urgency, behind what they're going to do that's going to save them. I'm very disappointed. I mean, maybe Chicago has done a better job than others, but they're letting all this just trickle through their fingers too. The energy is all against just draining them of their populations, their money, their will to kind of keep going, because people in these cities see that the powers that used to kind of keep control of things have just thrown everything up for grabs, and they're taking on causes rather than people as their advocacy. So, I just see that this is a, talk about virtual game playing, Tom. Obsidian is an organism. It's a living, breathing thing. But if you treat it like it's some sort of theoretical, ideological construct, it's a pretty quick trip to wreck the whole thing. So,
to me, and a lot of what, I mean, who knows, I'm sure I don't do a good enough job at it, but to me, everything depends on everything else. And when you talk about this weekend, one thing that, did you see before, I don't know if you watched, somehow or another I got stuck because Audrey was talking to a client. Before the game, I'm listening to the four distinguished gentlemen that are on the game, on before the game, the Bradshaw and the Jimmy Johnson, those guys. And I don't know who the other two are. But now, have you seen the spot where they all stand there and give you their best bet for the day?
What?
They give you the best bet, which game they like the best in terms of winning money on the day. This is now part of the pregame show?
You're kidding.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if you saw that, Matty. But
do they have to say what the odds are?
Yeah. They tell what the point line is and which bet they want. This is a long way away from anybody even mentioned that, like was thrown off the air or going or banned from football, right? So I listen to that and I go, "Do we really want to keep Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame?" I need to start doing the recreational hooch or something, because you can't do like that. I immediately think towards, and wait a minute, we've banned guys does anybody think that this isn't going to, when you can bet on stuff during the game, that this isn't going to reach a referee or a player at some point? I mean, like, some point soon?
It's already there, Tom.
I'm sure it's probably already there. But, by the way, speaking of which, that huge run the other team had, did you see the hold on Quinn, Mitty?
I'm not sure which play you're talking
about. The one where the guy, was there a 90-yard run or whatever?
On third and 20, and
yeah,
they threw a wide receiver screen.
Yeah.
Just basically saying, hey, let's try to get 5 or 10 here and punt it, and then they ended up scoring an 80-yard touchdown.
Yeah,
I didn't see that he got held on that play. It doesn't surprise me.
He was close to being raped. I mean, he was.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
He was the guy that was going to make the tackle. It was just a horrendous call, and or non-call. And that's all it takes. I mean, it was something.
Well, that
like
completely
it.
Changed the game. The Bears were about to get the ball back. They had the lead, and they had all the momentum in the world. Third and 20, crowd's going nuts, and then you give up an 80-yard touchdown, and the game was over at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it was an outrageous call. And then the one where the Bear they called the guy downfield on the Bears. He was, I don't know if he was downfield at all. It was really close.
Well, you can only be 1 yard past the line of scrimmage, and it looked like he was downfield to me, but. And we did that twice.
Yeah, we did. I'm telling you, not the first one, the second time. I thought he was pretty close.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I'm saying that call was absolutely outrageous. And, our ninth call. I mean, and whatever is money on it, but as we start talking about this cash, this money, this sports betting, you think any of our people in the city council, any of the people that are making it downstate, They're making this all legal. Has anybody worked their way through the financing and find out how much the state's actually going to make on it versus how much yet another layer of gambling? Can anybody give you an idea of how much the current gambling, the casinos and everything, how much that hurts the regular population? How much of a tax it is on people? Can anybody give you any sort of a clue, John, of what the downside is of this, of how many waitresses make $100 and then blow 50 of it on the machine out the door?
Or how many families are wrecked?
Yeah.
Or how many businesses are lost or houses lost? And this creating another larger underclass of people who have to be supported by welfare systems because they've squandered whatever resources they have. They've mortgaged their careers and their earning power to gambling, and you can't do that as a way of attracting business to an industry that you want to thrive like gambling, and not also see that you're going to be paying out a lot more money at the other end to support people who are ruined by the very thing you're pushing.
Well, when I was very young, I used to go to Las Vegas a lot because I loved to gamble, and I was pretty, you know, I was okay at counting cards. I was never a maniac at it, so I did it just enough to where I could keep my head above water. I never did it to go out and try and make money and make a living. There were guys on the trading floor that were like really good at it, but that was their life. I mean, they wouldn't have a drink when they were playing. They wouldn't look at the cocktail waitress. I could never do that. I was on vacation, right? So I had to look at the cocktail waitress once in a while, lost count. But I was pretty good at it. So Vegas to me in those days, Jan and Manny, the entire state of Nevada did not have 1 million people, right? So you flew in, you landed, you went to see a bunch of shows, you did some gambling, and you got the hell out of Dodge. And it basically cost the state of Nevada, you know, if I blew my, I used to bring, well, in those days, let's put it this way, if I used to bring $2,000 cash. This is 1978. And if I lost 300, I got pissed and just went to the pool I figured I had my head screwed on straight, so I just go to the pool and go to shows and wouldn't gamble anymore. So I was not the guy who blew my $2,000 and was when they first had, you know, did the line of credit and all that stuff. I was not interested in that. I was never that kind of a guy. But the idea, so I'm sure some people were, but the point is, it really didn't cost the state of Nevada that much. But don't say it didn't cost them anything. Because every time you pump gas, you'd walk into the gas station, there'd be the 20-cent, or 20-cent, the dime or the quarter slot machines, and you'd see an awful lot of population that maybe shouldn't be doing that, sitting in there banging away at these machines. And, I mean, if you went in the, when it's politically incorrect, if you go to a gas station in an African-American community, or any community, I mean, a lot of the blue-collar communities here in town, the African-American community, you walk in there and you're going to see people buying the crap out of these lottery tickets. And if you gave anybody a quiz and said, by the way, how much do these people pay out? Not one of them could tell you how much. So the idea that this stuff is good for society. I mean, I enjoyed it, so I'm not going to say you shouldn't be able to gamble. But the idea that in the net end of it, it's just another tax on your population. And the less people start thinking about it's fun for me, which it is, by the way. I love going to the horse races too. But at least I know at the end of the day, this is another tax. And one of these days, Jan, are people, I mean, maybe somebody has to get on a, I was going to say pulpit because I don't want to say you're a priest. Somebody's got to get on a someplace, Facebook or wherever the hell it is, with a big whiteboard and say, what do you think we're up to in terms of how much we extract from the population? But it used to be all levels of taxes. There used to be a study, a group, Manny, they would say, when I was real young, real young, before I was even like in college, I seem to remember that there was a day in April where you got done paying all your taxes and the rest of the year was on you, right, Jan?
Right. And then it became always encroaching farther into the year.
Then it became May, then it became June. And I'm going to say that if it's still being done, it's got to be, for some levels of income, it's got to be August or September. And by the time you look at it's this whole idea that people think, like, the city got money from the government for 1 year. But they're in such a hole, and now the government's got dough. So now the individual person owes what? The federal government $250,000. How the hell are you going to get that? I mean, so I mean, it's at some point here, there needs to be some logic. Somebody somewhere, you know, let's take, you know, 15 regular people, 15 from one side of the aisle, 15 to the other, go meet at Camp David for the weekend and say, all right, how much? Because it reaches the point where you start to totally degrade your industrial base. I mean, there is a connection between not being able to get a permit, paying this guy off, or the city taxing the living bleep out of you, and somebody not being willing to put a factory up and solve a supply chain problem. To think there's no connection there, John, is just ignorant. I think
totally ignorant.
But how do we get when things are in strife, like the city of Chicago is in strife? How do we get even if our administration was competent and had some kind of knowledge of how all this worked, which I really doubt. But if they did, how could you actually, how do you pause right now and get together some kind of a plan that makes some sense and start doing things, ticking off one little thing at a time? Well, you know, we'll solve this problem this month, next month. How do you even do that at this level when everything seems like it's just a big morass?
No easy way to do it, Tom. It means, you know, transforming the way we've kind of expected things to be with whether it's the schools or the police, crime, whatever. We've lost our grip on how, you know, things can get back to where they should be, where you think, you know, this is a city that has a lot going for it and we could attract more people if we kind of stopped what we were doing for a minute and thought, maybe what we're doing is not the long-term solution to the problems that we have. But it's all about short-term fixes to things that are just distractions. I'm sorry. I mean, I have no particular, you know, fear that the city's going to look at the problems we have and put them in the right order of priority and say, we got to do this because if we don't do this, none of these other things make any difference whatsoever. It's just about addressing things in a scattershot, completely unthought-out way. And all you do then is just entrench the corruption and the misspending of money, because everybody is thinking that I just have to look at one little angle of it. That's my job here, and I don't worry about anything else. That's not my problem. And when you have a mayor who doesn't know how to put all this together, as most big cities seem to have these days, you've got a complete morass. And, you know, the whole thing to me that's so funny about wealth tax debate, and, you know, the worst wealth tax of all is, you know, gambling up the wazoo. To me, that takes the hard-earned wealth of people who are kind of holding up their biggest end of everything and taking advantage of them and raping their futures.
You know, I mean, you think one of these buffoons that are voting on, like, the new casino and betting on the sports gambling could even rattle you off what the city's take is? I don't see how they make hardly any money in sports gambling. They only pay. They don't get anything gross, and the place nets 10%, right, Maddie? Isn't that what you pay 11 to 10, right?
Ideally, yeah. If it's an even money bet like that, yep.
All right, so it's 11 to 10. Yeah, I'm sure they do better on the teaser bets, right?
They do, and then but across the board, yeah, they're taking 10%.
All right, so and then if there's a casino, you don't get a piece of the crap bet. You get a piece of the profits. And you get license fees and stuff, right? But I mean, it's, at the end of the day, is it even worth the effort for a city the size of Chicago to have, like, I mean, it's not going to solve anything, I don't think. Hey, by the way, real quick question before we go to break. When did a first down become the line of gain? Where did, now that every person, you can't say it's a first down anymore, you got to say a line of gain?
They're both correct.
But what does it even mean, a line of gain?
I just started hearing that time, and I thought, well, maybe I just haven't been listening frequently enough to realize that's replaced first down. But I had no idea, first of all, what they were talking about.
Well, Adam Amin, who did the Bears game yesterday, who's also the play-by-play voice of the Bulls, who also did some of the White Sox regular season and postseason games because he does playoff baseball for FS1, I think we've heard enough of him, but even though I actually kind of like him, but that seems to be his phrase because he used that like 10 times yesterday. The line of gain.
Who's no? He's the TV voice of the Bulls.
Yes,
so he's with Stacey King now.
This is his second year now with Stacey.
Who was there before?
Neil Funk forever.
He retired. Or they
yeah, he retired.
Is he any good? This guy, you mean?
You should watch the Bulls. They're really fun to watch. I think he's good. I think he's a little corny at times, but I think he's good. And he works for Fox and does NFL, and he also does Major League Baseball for Fox and FS1. So nationally, he's pretty well respected too. But he's the voice of the Bulls. That's his day job.
Who's the guy doing the National World Series? I was listening to the radio. It used to be the guy from the Cubs, and now he wasn't on there.
On radio? I don't know.
No, he was ESPN
on TV
Radio.
It's Joe Buck.
Well, ESPN Radio is a. TV's doing, Fox is doing the World Series.
Yeah, it's Joe Buck.
Okay, but on radio, it was, what's his name? Scoop or Boog or
Boog? Boog-Shiambi?
Yeah, he was doing that. He didn't do it last night.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't listened to it on the radio.
Oh, because what's her name? It was Boog
in the World Series?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It was Boog and, my girlfriend.
Jessica Mendoza?
I think she's been, Boog wasn't there and she was demoted to third. So they got some other guy in the middle between. And, of course, like the fourth inning, she finally said, oh, you asked me a question or something. She was not happy. I finally get to talk or something. And she said, I'm going, well, these young ladies, she was out with that one real quick. And then she got to talk more after that. But, yeah, it was Boog and her when the playoff series or something. But maybe, anyway, SP Futures up 18, NASDAQ Futures up 57. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 57. Individual stocks in the Dow. I've got everybody pretty much up. I've got Apple down a whole 12 cents. They took a hit last week on their earnings, but I have a feeling they'll probably bounce back here. We'll see. Individual stocks, I got 3M up $1.40. I've got Caterpillar up $1.30. Caterpillar's been real strong since the earnings. Goldman Sachs up 3.22. They've been volatile like for a while. Everybody else is up, but not all that much. We were talking before break about, you know, a lot of things that are, I mean, tomorrow is the big day. Obviously this week, the Fed is about to, tell us what they're gonna do with this taper stuff, because everybody's pointing towards November. They have been pouring all kinds of money into the, system in the last few weeks. Which, you know, they've been doing like kind of a lot, but it's really, I don't know how this is all going to end, because, I mean, we have gold is not doing well because the dollar keeps going up. All right. Well, the dollar is strong, but it's strong in relation to other currencies, but it's a place we haven't been before, because everything is just running up because there is liquidity in the system that seemingly an awful lot of people have, and but a lot of people don't have. And we're going to talk about, you know, we don't want to run through the inflation argument we give all the time, but there's going to come a time, and I have to believe that somewhere along the line with the midterm elections coming up, that somebody better address this, because I don't know who the hell's running anywhere, but it just seems to me, John, that the last few elections, no matter which one it's been or no matter who's been in power, have been whoever's in there, they don't like it. We go to the other side, and then we don't like the other side, and we're back again. I don't know if it means being a third party. I don't know what it means, but something's weird here, and it doesn't look like it. Unless we decide we're going to tone it back a little bit, I don't see how they do that. I don't see how they decide to go back to a regular money growth and all of a sudden have the market go up or go down and the interest rates go up. I don't see these guys doing that unless they're forced to. Do you?
No. Kicking and screaming.
Yeah. I don't know if I was in the same spot, what I would do. I mean, it's like stopping the party. And I don't think that the people that are doing so well right now with this, with the amount of money that's around, people are doing so well. I don't think they ever want this to stop. They didn't want it to stop, you know, last time. And then until Volcker turned around, the only difference is last time the interest rates went up early, that the Fed did not intercept the interest rate move up, so your asset prices actually went down because interest rates were up so much that nobody could afford to buy stuff. So this is a totally different event because the Fed has stayed, I'll use the term, on it, and has essentially blown their balance sheet to huge numbers. What I'm talking about here specifically is when you see inflation go up, in theory, your interest rates should go up as well. Because if you lend somebody money, at the end of the year, you owe them basically two things. You owe them a cost of the money you just used, because you're making money from somebody else's money, so you need to pay them some, and that's only logic, which is called the real rate of interest. And there also should be, if you're going to lend somebody $100, and everybody knows at the end of the year the $100 will be worth 97, you need to make that up as well. So you need the inflation piece and you need the real rate of interest. And they should add together. And now they're not. Because the thing that determines what our interest rates are these market rates and treasuries and so forth and even corporates. Well, now what the Fed has been doing is they're jumping out and they're buying them. So like Europe has a big inflation problem or gaining inflation problem. Yet their interest rates are still below zero. They're almost back to zero this morning, as we talked about a minute ago. But they're almost back to zero. So as soon as you lend somebody money, you're a net loser because you're going to get money back that's worth less than it was last year, which is a totally the market should not put up with that. And they'd say, okay, well, why is it doing that? Because there's a strong buyer in these bonds. Well, who's the buyer? Well, the buyer is the central banks. So they essentially are starting a fire and running out and pouring, gasoline on it from a 55-gallon drum and dousing the fire with gas is the closest thing but they continue to do it. And what you notice in their balance sheet, it's taking more and more money to keep this thing down. This thing being these nominal interest rates, real interest rates for that matter. I worry about it blowing, Jan, because it's blown before in our lifetime. You know, we're old guys. But every month that they push it even further, I think the potential gets worse. I mean, everybody we have on here that is our sober people, guys like Hal Snar, what do you say? This is not going to end well. How can it? But yet we keep pushing, because right now it's an absolute boon for somebody who has assets. And I don't know how, so rational people. I mean, Milton Friedman said, nothing is more addictive than the first pieces of inflation because it feels so good to so many. But right now, the middle to lower class, who doesn't seem to have any voice anywhere, everybody you talk to, all they're doing is screaming, Chad. I mean, if the people going out trying to buy a car for their kid, and it's like 15 grand for a piece of crap. I mean, right?
Tom, do you think a lot of this can be traced to the fact that the lockdowns were so long and so draconian? Are we seeing kind of the playing out of this completely, stopping of the economy pretty much? So consumption, spending, whatever, just ended pretty much. Businesses, you know, teetering, tanking. Are we seeing, you know, is the inflationary push that you see a result of those lockdowns?
No.
Or is it made worse by them?
Made worse. I mean, I trace it back to 2007. We poured money into the system, and it threw salve over all wounds, and they kept it up. I mean, we're talking about, you know, in 2008, 2009, they poured money into the system to save the money markets and so forth. They essentially bought stuff so they wouldn't break the bank. It all started right there. But the point is, it started to feel good, so they never came back. We never had a year in there where the money supply grew 3%. Because the economy was growing like 1 or 2, we started messing with the CPI numbers. Okay, so we would say that the CPI can't even reach 2%. So that was the excuse of pouring more money in. But look at the industries that have done well over that period of time. If you look at the last 15 years, you know, what have things cost versus what they did back then? And we're off, and all this stuff I was talking about the sports. I mean, Maddie's right. Do I really care if somebody's center of Iowa gets paid by the local pizza guy? No, I don't. But it's an exercise in not looking forward in what you do. No man can do only one thing. Everything you do has all kinds of repercussions to it. Right? I mean, it just does. And anything serious that you do. So, I don't think we have people that anticipate it. Or if they do, they anticipate if it's good for them, they don't care about the negative parts for other people. And as I age, I'm starting to get to a point where it seems like it's more B than A. I don't think it's just mistakes. I don't think the Fed, just didn't know what they were doing for 12 years or 15 years. Especially with Janet Yellen at the helm, because I think she's one of the crookedest people I've ever come across. You know, and I hate to say that about anybody, because I mean, I'm sure if you lend her $20, she'd give you $20 back. I mean, not on that level. But I mean, I think she knows very well who she's favoring when she was a Fed chairman and who she isn't. I mean, some people will say, you know, that's what you gain by being. I was talking to somebody, one of my places I like to go, and it's a bar restaurant that the bar is interesting, John. You'd love it. Of course, I can't get you out, but you'd love it because it's half attorneys, half architects. And if you want to learn stuff about what's going on in the city, that's the place. And one of the guys is an architect, and we started talking about, the people who got all the permits changed for, what's the name of the guy who's going to be doing all the work by us, Manny? They bought all that property, was gifted to them, basically.
Sterling Bay.
Sterling Bay, yeah. And I said, well, you know, that's, and he goes, no, that's what you get. If you learn how to work within the system and you've done it for a long time and you've paid your dues, then you know who to go to for the permit when nobody else can. You go, that's okay. That's how a city works. So depending on, it's not like everybody believes that everything should be fair to everybody at all times, right?
No, it hasn't been. Yeah.
They obviously don't. I mean, there's no question that a lot of people think that when you've been in there and you help the alderman get elected, you help this, you help that, you help the mayor, and all of a sudden when times come, you get favor over the next guy. That's the Chicago way. And there's a lot of people who feel that is, you know, the Chicago way but I think to a certain extent, that's the way human beings work. I mean, if you've been helping somebody, been close and been there when they needed you, when it's your turn, you know, one hand washes the other. I mean, I get that. But when it goes much beyond that, then you got a problem, I think, where somebody new can't even get close to the thing. That's a problem. Anyway, what I'm saying is, do I think that, we have a Fed chair who will tell you that their solution for the banks wasn't to have them incredibly capitalized. So the same person isn't going to sit there and say, gee, we put so much money in the system that the interest rates for individual people and their money is zero or negative, yet the same person who's got a credit card at the same bank is paying 25%. You can't get the same response out of the same guy who all he cares about is having the banks having all kinds of money. So once you have that as your goal, the other stuff kind of falls out, maybe not where you and I might like it. Or where am I wrong here?
No. Clearly you're not, Tom. But But, you know, the thing that gets me is people like Yellen, and she's not alone, they've left a very clear paper trail of who they are working for with their speaking fees and, you know, the stuff they say and the stuff they don't say and the stuff they don't take on. I think these people, at some level, are pretty transparent. I mean, having said that, it's amazing what they get away with in spite of being so transparent when it comes to looking at long-range, you know, situations that they've created. That they take care of a very small piece of the businesses that they are really in charge of controlling, and they can manipulate it in ways that create fantastic wealth for certain people and can destroy other people just as easily. And it all kind of is not directly traceable to them, but clearly it is traceable at some level. And I just kind of, the fact that you would let somebody like Yellen, with her track record, and just in the last 10 years, to have the position she does, and not think that there's something deeply troubling about what's going on, you have to be pretty naive.
Well, why individually are human beings so intelligent and are collectively so stupid?
I think it's power. I think, you know, at some point, the mistakes you make or the crookedness that you build into your system become unassailable, just because you've kind of shown your ability to destroy the people who are going to come at you, and people just kind of leave you alone, and they don't talk about, you know, your questionable decisions or your questionable ethics, nor does anybody in the media really take on these people. And they're all—it's all about protecting the people who, for whatever reason, have done incredibly stupid things and should have lost their jobs a long time ago and never been let near the centers of power again. But it doesn't happen that way, and so it makes you think that there's incredible tolerance going on here, and this is exactly what these people are all about. And as you said, I think it's doing exactly. It isn't like they have no idea of the consequences of what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing, and that's kind of what they've been paid and told to do.
So how is it that we can, over a 30-year period, and I can start it, I'll tell you, I can start the Twitter wars here easy with Maddie, as I'll bring up a subject, and I think that, you know, well, I was in a union for a little bit, but I've read a lot of what it is, and I, you know, some of the stuff that goes on, it becomes a bureaucracy like anything else, right? Any kind of a union. Now people look at every union like it's a city union, but it's not the way they used to be. They were other kinds of unions. And right now, the people whose dads, moms maybe too, were in unions and saw I'm not putting a blessing on unions top to bottom. But it had a pretty good life, a lot of it because of unions. If you even go to a blue collar or a low collar bar right now and say, well, you know, what we're really missing are unions, you will get a tremendous debate from people how crooked the unions were, and how we don't need those stinking unions, and we want right to work states, and we want all this kind of stuff. And you know, I can probably do their side of the argument better than they can. Okay, but the point is, If we pull them out of the picture and ask the next question, well, who exactly speaks for you at state or at the federal government? I'm not saying that the unions cared all that much about people who weren't in the union. I'm not giving them this philanthropic, you know, they had a button in their shirt because they're afraid their heart might pop out of their chest kind of thing. It just so happened that a lot of stuff that the unions wanted happened to line up with a lot of what the middle class and lower class wanted. A lot of the work rules and those kinds of things, man, happened to line up. Now they just happened, but the fact is, they did pretty much line up. So you had somebody there who was at least on your side, whether you knew it or not. Okay, and now you've got nobody. So everybody argues about politics, and if you say, but who's exactly talking to Dick Durbin tomorrow about what you want? What do you mean? I voted. I'm this and that. Well, have you given any money to your party lately? Well, no, I never give any money. They suck. Okay, well, that's cool. You complain about Commonwealth Edison? I'm just as bad. I mean, do you support the Citizens Utility Board or whatever the hell they are? Who are they? They're a bunch of crooks too. All right, well, at the end of the day, you're just some powerless guy sitting here sucking on your beer watching a football game, which is me too. At the end of the day, you're useless, right? Other than you can argue a real lot in this bar when you go home, you're going to fall asleep and not even forget the argument. That's kind of where we are, John, I think. And I put myself in that group, except, you know, I do this, and the listeners come in, everybody has a voice here. But in reality, I mean, the Zuckerbergs of the world are laughing at us. They have to be, collectively. I can put anything by these idiots. They don't even know what I'm doing. Right?
Well, they have no voice, and nobody listens to those voices when they do emerge. You know, your take on union history is mine, too. At one time, say the first 20 years of the 20th century, unions, you know, there were some really scumbag unions.
Oh, sure.
And you can go back and just read the accounts of, you know, it was all about getting membership in these unions when you're trying to organize. And if you have people who were reluctant to join, it was nothing to go out and break their legs. You know, this is one way to kind of get people into the union, is you extort, you know, their membership. So there was plenty of that, and it gave many unions a bad name, and it lingers to this day. But the real problem, I think, became the public sector unions that took monopoly industries like the post office or education, where there aren't that many viable alternatives, anything like the size of those organizations, and made them immune from any kind of, you know, tracking or house cleaning or whatever else. And all they demand more and more employees, more and more members, and they get them, even when you have declining school districts and the post office too, with declining work for them to do. But the engines just keep going on, and they become more and more expensive, and there's less and less you can do about them. So, you know, it's pitted those people who pretty much are, I think, to a great extent, are being subsidized to do less work than ever.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's not how the unions were themselves originally. But that's kind of what they've turned into in the public sector. It's given them a bad name, and it's given unions a bad name again, too. But it's also kind of made it, you know, even more difficult to work against that kind of culture, because that is the prevailing culture now. If most unions are like that, a union that tries to buck that isn't going to get anywhere. You're not going to have any rival organizations to clean any of that up. So I see it as kind of carved in stone. And if it weren't public sector unions that we were dealing with to this extent, I don't think things would be quite as awful as they've become.
But so who exactly
we have, so
who exactly speaks for the American worker right now? And the answer is nobody.
Nobody.
And
sorry, not the Department of Labor, not, you know, the Immigration Service. None of this stuff has any regard for the average worker, Tom, at all. They can't, or they couldn't say the stuff they say with a straight face.
And they've managed to indoctrinate, and I don't know if it was on purpose or they just got there or whatever. They've managed to indoctrinate people into thinking that, because I think what's happened is people have been beaten down by this inflation versus salary number for so long that if you, in our heart of hearts, if all of a sudden we had the group in, where the hell were they? There were the guys in the tire shop in the Walmart that tried to form the union.
Yeah.
In the first place, they decided that they just closed the tire shop, right? So the second, that was a few years ago, maybe more than a few. Then was it last year that another guys tried the union? They actually lost because can you imagine the pressure that the company put on those people? And I'm going to say that most Americans, their view right now is, thank God they lost, because if they had to pay people, the message has been put out there, because if they had to pay people more money, the cost of me going to Walmart is higher. And right now it's very obvious that the American consumer doesn't figure out that the stuff they buy, if it's from a place that pays people all the rice they can eat, either in China or here, that they're better off. Or they would rather not have a union's win at Walmart, because the mentality is, if I have to pay these guys 30% an hour or more, or probably they should get or something, given where the inflation has been, that somehow it's going to cost me more to go shop at Walmart. And right now, I'd say most of the population will take Plan B. I don't care if that guy gets paid anything. I just want my milk at, you know, 80 cents.
Right. Who's looking after me? Nobody. I got to look after myself.
I got to look after myself. So the fact is, I'd rather not buy stuff at China, but if the blue jeans are $20 cheaper, that's where I'm buying them from. Right? I mean, and we're kind of caught in this trick bag where people, I think, are thinking sort of the wrong way. I mean, my grandfather never had any money, but he worked for the railroad. But the thought of you bringing in a pair of blue jeans that didn't say Union Made, I mean, you took them back. Now, you know, it might have been $2 more at that point. He was willing to pop out the $2. It was worth it.
Or drive a foreign car when everybody else around you had an American. I mean, these were pretty unpopular, you know, choices that people made, and people weren't hesitant about telling you about them. But nobody really today can get out of that mode where they're so desperate to save a buck that they'll look the other way. It's like, my ethics only go so far here because I've got a family to feed and I've got a future to plan for. And I can't worry about somebody else who's, you know, bucking the system, trying to get an extra 25 cents an hour out of the employer. I got to think about what I'm paying out here, and that's more important to me. And you can't blame people, but that's the effect of beating them down far enough where all they do is just grub for their own meager existence and tell everybody else to go figure it out yourself. Well, that's not a very cohesive economy.
Well, John, if you can hang around after break, I think our buddy Mike Hart is out. I think he injured himself somehow.
No.
I hope he's all right. Yeah, I think he's something about stairs and a broken leg. I don't know.
Didn't sound good.
No, did that sound good?
Yeah, John, if you can hang, that would be great.
Sure.
Futures up 17. Nasdaq futures up 49. So we're still up. We were up 22 when we came in. But it looks like we're going to be strong. November is usually a pretty strong month. So who knows? We might be going to have an end of the year rally here. But we got the Fed meeting tomorrow on Wednesday, which obviously we'll talk about a little bit. But John, we come back. Let's when it comes to these buildings and stuff downtown, if you could work us through exactly, just because the assessments have gone higher, is that what other things enter the formula before you actually get your tax bill? Because I think a lot of people don't understand it. First of all, I don't understand it. So when we come back, let's work through that. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Brett Weber, and the board. S&P futures up 15.50 now. NASDAQ futures up 38. So NASDAQ has given up roughly half of their gain, but the S&Ps have only given up a little bit, 6 points. But we're sneaking down from the highs here a little bit. Dow futures still up 143. They were up 170 or so. Over in Europe, we were bullish a while ago. We're still bullish. DAX up 104.7%. FTSE up 27.4. CAC around up 48.7. In Asia, we've got, this is a big move here, and the Nikkei is up to almost 3%, 2.6%, 754 points. Shanghai, however, is down 2, so unchanged, and Hang Seng's down 222, which is almost 4%. So, again, they've been kind of go all over the place. The bonds, interesting number here is the one in Europe. We're 1.59, so we're pretty much right where we were, even though it's up 3 basis points. We were down all on Friday. But the Bund is up 2 basis points, minus 0.07, so, again, making a run at the zero number again. Japan, same, at a positive 0.10. We've got oil up 53 cents, 84.10. Brent up 75 cents, 84.47. Natural gas down 7 cents, 5.35. Arbob up a penny, 2.38. And we've got gold up 7.20 to 17.91, making yet another run at 1800, which we don't seem to, as soon as it gets there, it's like whack-a-mole. Silver now up 8 cents. It was unchanged earlier, 24.05. Actually, now it just popped 2 cents. It's up 10 cents, 24.05. Copper unchanged at 4.37. And we've got Bitcoin up 11.11 to 61,872. So Bitcoin on fire this morning, trying to get back to 63,000, which it was early last week. Maybe we got forced traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic building steadily on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Some heavy traffic volumes coming in from the west, but again, no crashes or significant issues causing delay there. Just normal traffic volume. Same for the Southside expressways. We do have a crash way southwest. I-55, it's actually a emergency road closure due to some emergency road work. I don't know if it's a pothole or what happened, but I-55 on the southbound side just before Highway 30 down to the southwest, traffic is getting by in the center lane only, and this is causing major congestion. Solid traffic and expect delays as crews are working to patch something up there that's causing traffic to only get by on the center lane at on the I-55 southbound side at Highway 30. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, sunny but very cool. A high of just 47 today. Right now it's clear and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 84. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, the Bears are now 3-5 after they fell at home yesterday to the 49ers 33-22. Sunday Night Football, it was the Cowboys upsetting the Vikings in Minnesota 20-16. Bulls were off last night. They're back in action tonight, looking to improve to 6-1 as they're number one in the Eastern Conference right now, or tied atop the East anyway. They'll head to Boston to take on the Celtics. That's a 6:30 Central Time tip-off. Blackhawks were off yesterday as well. They're back in action tonight to host Ottawa at the UC. That's a 7 p.m. puck drop. Coyotes did play last night. They lost to the Hurricanes 2-1. Chief.
Kind of a breaking news here today, for especially for anybody who loves big conglomerates and even has a hint of what antitrust should be like. It appears that Coca-Cola is going to pay 5.6% for total control of Body Armor, sports drink maker Body Armor. Maybe you know who these guys are. I imagine you do.
I've heard of it, but I can't say I've ever tried it.
Actually, one of their biggest shareholders is the estate of Kobe Bryant, that evidently is going to get $400 million with this trade. Wow, that's a number. Coke bought a 15% stake in Body Armor, so now so evidently their drink Powerade has been a total failure, right? Against Gatorade.
Against Gatorade, yes. I wouldn't say it's been a failure because it's been around for 20 years, and I mean, they have some share.
They have some share. You're right.
But they've never come close to Gatorade, no.
Right, and so the they bought a 15% stake in these guys in 2018. The deal for the remaining isn't entirely unexpected. Coke first said in February they intended to buy a controlling interest. later this year is a pre-acquisition filing with the Federal Trade Commission. So when you can't develop, you buy, right? Owning Body Armor helps Coke gain market share in the sports drink category, although Pepsi's Gatorade, now why Pepsi owns Gatorade is another story, is far and away the market leader with roughly 70% market share. By positioning itself as a healthier sports drink, Body Armor surpassed Coke's Powerade to become the second largest player in the category. So instead of fixing Powerade, you just buy the other guy. The retail brand's 1.5 billion sales, so they basically are paying 3.5 to 4 times sales, which is kind of a lot. They also own Vitamin Water, Smart Water, and Energy Brands. It's all part of these guys. I've seen that Vitamin Water. Has anybody ever buy that stuff?
That's popular. Yeah, so Smart Water. I think your buddy LeBron James and a few other guys are involved in one of those two. I can't remember which one. But, yeah, there's some money to be made there.
All right, so... Anyway, Coke just bought these guys, and it's a big day for those guys. Wish we had some of that stuff. Wish we, Kobe Bryant estate. Well, good for them. They got in early on, and $400 million is real dough. All right, so John, when people talk about, first of all, let's just say big time homeowners like Matty Weber. Now, when he gets his tax bill, the assessor really doesn't give a crap what Maddie and Jill do for a living and whether they're gazillionaires or whether they're poor as church mice, right?
Right.
They basically look at the market value of the building. And how does that formula work? There's an assessment, there's something called a multiplier, and what else? Is there three variables?
Well, your assessed valuation is a product of your presumed resale value, what the property is actually worth. Then there's a factor that's multiplied against that gives you your assessed valuation, and then the multiplier applies to each tax year, and it varies. You know, it's something that is applied pretty much statewide to take whatever your assessed valuation is, multiplied by the multiplier, that is your tax liability. So it's a three-step process. What the county says your property is worth, the percentage of that creates your assessed valuation, and then your assessed valuation times multiplier is your tax liability.
Okay, so if they say somebody's house is on the open market today would draw $1 million, go through the math. How does that make it down to your tax bill?
It'll be like, you know, whatever the percentage is. I don't have a tax bill handy at the moment, but it would say give you a multiply that by, you know, 30%, 40% or whatever. That gives you an assessed valuation, and that's a considerably lower number than your actual resale value, your supposed resale value. And the multiplier, you know, a small number, much smaller number, that actually gives you your tax bill.
Right. So if the resale is $1 million, and the first multiplier is 50%, now you're down to $500,000. Then there's the tax multiplier that's, you know, 2%, then you're paying 2% of $500,000.
Right.
So it's a three-step process. Now, when you move into commercial buildings, is it it's more revenue generator, or is it totally revenue, or is it totally, I mean, if you had a building there that was this, you know, could be an office building, and you, for some reason, don't rent it, there's still going to be a tax bill, right?
Right. That's taxed differently because it's presumed to generate additional income. So it's not just the resale value, what the thing is worth, but what you're actually making on rents or whatever else is going on in that building.
Okay, so say there's a high-rise downtown, COVID hits, and everybody moves. You don't have one solitary person in there. Now it's going to be taxed just like Maddie Weber's place, or no? Or is it, I mean, is it just,
well, you'll probably have to fight it because you're going to be presumed to be to have a property that is generating X amount of dollars given the number of business, your commercial units you have in it, or rental units, whatever else that you are getting money from. And whether those are actually generating income or not, you know, in a lockdown situation, if your business is fold and your tenants flee and you're sitting with an empty building, you still got to get a bill that presumes that you have all these things fully rented and up and operating, and you'll have to challenge it based on what's really going on there. So it then becomes a battle between you and the taxing authority as far as what you really are liable for, because you can't pay tax on money you never had if it wasn't generating the income it was supposed to or what it was built to do.
Well, is the key number still, is the key number what they think you could sell it for today, which should be a derivative of the income, right? But it may not be. But
right, it's figures into it, yeah.
So it still starts with the same number. There's a one number on top.
The market value of your property, right?
So if the rents go up 10%, they're going to loosely assume that the market value is also up 10%.
Right, right.
So even though it's income generated, it kind of gets them to the same place with the same three numbers, the same, we think your building's worth $1 billion, but so if they come out and in a 2 years from now, Maddie's place, instead of $1 million, they say, we think it's worth $2 million. It doesn't mean that his tax necessarily is going to double.
No. I mean, they may try to.
Yeah, they may try to.
I'm pretty sure ground that you can get it brought down. I mean, this is a thriving business, too. You know, the reduction of a tax bill based on evidence that you can furnish that shows what's really going on here. Because the assessor operates in kind of a theoretical world, just looking at what this thing is on paper. What's the square footage of this lot? What's it improved with? How old is the building? How many units do you have in it? How many, water taps do you have in the thing? This is just, raw data that translates into a number from the assessor's thinking. But what's really going on there may be a totally different thing. It's like Pritzker with his, building on Astor Street by ripping out the toilets. He made the thing uninhabitable, but on paper it looked like it was a townhouse on Astor Street and should be taxed appropriately. But, of course, he knew how to get around that by just demolishing his bathrooms.
Well, I mean, the other side of the story is, though, and I hate to defend, I don't really want to defend him, but if I bought
please
one,
don't tell, please.
But I'm saying if I bought some place that nobody spent a dime on for 30 years as much as where the address is, and I had to totally gut the place to bring it up to any sort of 2020 standards to the point where it was unlivable for 2 years. I'm not so sure I want to pay a full price for 2 years either on my taxes.
Right.
So, I mean, some of the logic there, I'm not even living there, for God's sake. I mean, the thing's uninhabitable. Can't you give me a break until it's done? I know you're going to stick me the minute I move in, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, where I'm going to is, I'm trying to get on the property tax side. I mean, Maddie's heard me go through this ad nauseum about how much can you really get out of somebody on the income tax side? Can we talked earlier about the, what can you really get 60-70% out of somebody? I mean, you not only want somebody to pay the federal, you want them to pay the state, you want them to pay some cities that have an income tax, this huge property tax. Oh, by the way, you're also supposed to go to the racetrack every Saturday and kick in, 15% there, because that's what the state takes. And oh, by the way, you're supposed to do $200 a week in lottery tickets where they take 45%.
And you're go to your cannabis dispensary.
Yeah, and you're supposed to sports gamble. I mean, at the end of the day, what are you supposed to be living at? Like 10% of your salary? I mean, they're going to find a way. There does get to the point where you can't get any more blood out of a turnip. And as the city's heading with this downtown stuff, I mean, I'm sure they're very reluctant to lower these taxes, even though the downtown is a shadow of its former self. I mean, there's no way that you're going to save the same tax out of 175 West Jackson with CVS gone, every restaurant gone, except for the one sandwich joint still there. I mean, at some point they're going to say, here, take my friggin' building, or I'm moving, or the rent's going to get so high saying, okay, I'm willing to pay more in the city because people from all the suburbs can get here on public transportation and blah, 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 blah. But there's a number at which I'm moving to Schaumburg, I'm moving to Oak Brook, or there's a number to where I'm moving to Wisconsin or I'm moving to Wyoming. I mean, are people conscious of I'll say the straw that broke the camel's back number, or they don't care?
I don't think they care, Tom. They care to the extent that they know that there's an impact if people decide to move to McHenry County but stay in Illinois versus going to Walworth County in Wisconsin. And that's a whole different ballgame. But they're banking on the likelihood that most people, at least in the next 18 months or so, aren't going to do that. And so they are kind of, I think, testing the waters to see how many people this will drive out of the state. And Illinois isn't the only state in this bag. But that's one of the things I think about the lockdown, and trying to bring things back again. It's probably a way of calibrating the system to decide what kind of disruptions are going to cause what kinds of dislocations in our population. And it could just be an elaborate and very painful, you know, market study to decide, well, the next time around, if we do this, we know what this result is likely to be, and given these other factors, we'd rather go down this road than that road. But it kind of has that smell to me that there's enough people talking about picking up stakes and moving, and some of them moving far away, and some of them moving out of the country, too, to make me think that this is not by accident. The people who created these lockdowns knew exactly what they were forcing people to do, and deciding, well, now let's just study what happens. Now we know what this factor was that created the situation that made people desperate. Let's see how these people solve it for themselves, and that will give us more information to use later on when we need to make a similar change in direction, or we want to move people back to some place. So it's all about, you know, deciding how stressed out people really are and how willing they are to just leave. And don't you think that this is somehow a grand strategy? That this can't be. If there was enough of it worldwide to make me think that it's all a way of just shaking out the pieces and seeing where they fall from now on.
Well, there's a lot of it. That's the part that I have trouble with, Jan, and I keep, you know, asking you, because you're somebody in tune with Chicago politics even more than me, if that's possible. But I mean, I look at when I was a kid and the place you gambled, unless you get, there was always a bookie to get something down in a Bear game, right? And the Chicago mob, of course, locked all the bookies together in Las Vegas. You know, it was Tony Spilotro, and that's what he did. And it was a huge advance in the industry. But basically, if you wanted to bet, you went to the track. And there was 20,000 people every night at Sportsman's Park, right? I mean, it was a big deal. It was safe. It was a great saloon. It was great people watching. I mean, it was a nice place to go. Arlington's gorgeous, or was. And, Washington Park was nice. I mean, Hawthorne's a great racetrack. It's a great old racetrack. So part of it, I think, is that the people who own those tracks, they, I won't say paid off, they were in Dutch with the, no, it's probably politically incorrect, with the politicians of their era. Now the new politicians come in and they want their guys in. Okay, so we're gonna have, well, I'll say off track betting, but those guys got the money for that. We're gonna have this lottery because other states have it. So okay, you do some lottery. Now you're gonna do off-track betting, but now we're going to decimate the horse business, because now we're going to have casinos. Now we're going to have, to the point now where essentially the horse business, one more track and we're toast in Illinois, right? I mean, right. So you've decimated that business, but now, okay, we have the casino business, which is going to save us, but now all of a sudden we've got video poker in every restaurant, and that video poker doesn't go through the casino industry, which we essentially gave the state to. But now we've got that. The state has its own casino, and now we're the gambling head there. But now we're going to Chicago. But do they even understand of how much the next thing, just some of it, just obliterates the one before? I mean, I guess the term is, what's the marginal benefit of the next scheme? And you would hope that somebody in office, before you just go forward with this stuff, like right now, if you decide you're going to have a sports betting, and the average person, you want the average person to lose $5,000 a year in sports. I know that's way high, but there must be some number where you say, okay, there's going to be, $1 billion spent on sports gambling. And Matty, you probably know the number. What do they anticipate in the first year? What all these places? Is it the total handle coming from people's cell phones and stuff is going to be, somebody must have a number.
I think it's like, I think they did in the first year $3 billion or something. Now that's bets made. That's not what they made.
Well, it's a handle.
Yeah, and that number's loose. It could be higher than that.
All right, so let's pick a number. 2 years from now, once these guys all get rolling, I'm going to say somebody has a figure in their mind of $10 billion on the handle.
Yeah, that exactly.
All right, so that means people are going to lose $1 billion. Correct, if it's all straight, gimmick bets.
That's probably a good estimation, yeah.
Right, so, well, I mean, gross, because the guy's got to, they must have an office somewhere they got to pay for it, there's going to be windows, right? So, I mean, so that's gross.
Well, they put a lot of money in the technology, too, because, right. I mean, they update their app, like, every 2 weeks, and it's really dynamic, these applications, because you're betting live lines that are changing by the second, and then the odds are moving by the second as money comes in, and as points are scored, it's... It's pretty sophisticated stuff. They must their technology budget's got to be enormous.
All right, so that means that at the top line, that your citizenry is out a billion. Now, some people are winning, some people are losing. But the bottom line is, it's $1 billion drain, right? We'll stick with the easy 10%.
I think that's probably pretty accurate, too.
Okay, yep. So now the place is going to net, if they're a good business, with all the stuff you're talking about. Because it's not cheap. You know, you got to how many programmers and stuff you have there? How many people you got looking for scams?
It's got to be a ton.
Yeah, so what do you think their net is? 20% is probably good.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be on the high end.
All right, so that's $200 million. And the state income tax is 5%. Okay, so what are we down to? $10 million the state gets.
Yeah, and I think I saw a loose number that in the first year the state made like $26 million.
Okay,
so you know, so we may be off here and there on our estimations, but we're not that far off.
I think the part that we're off is I think they make a boatload more in the gimmick bets, which are now over 50% than the straight bets. I bet they make like 30% on that stuff.
Yeah, that could be.
It's got to be 30% a parlay card.
Sure,
at least. And because remember what
the, it might the, be 90%. I have no idea.
Yeah, but well, yeah, it's way more than 10. I think if everybody just made straight bets, they'd fold.
Yeah.
Anyway, so but there's a number there. But now the question is, $1 billion is coming out of people's pockets. Now, does that mean that when you go to put the tax on Maddie's house, not accusing you of ever making a bet, but now if Maddie's, if there's how many
certainly people, not winning one.
Well, but if somebody. If there's, okay, if let's make it simple. If there's 10 people that are betting and the total loss is going to be $1 billion, guess what? Everybody's going to lose. All the 10 are going to be down $100 million, which obviously is a lot more than 10, and that's not the number. But or if it's 100 million people doing it, it's going to be $10 a person. Right? So somebody somewhere, when he dropped the tax bill on his house, he's got somewhere between, he's got less because he's been, you're getting him some other place, right?
Yep.
Now, if you're getting them for parking tickets, or one of my clients was telling me how many the family's got like 30 of those 6 miles an hour tickets in the last quarter. They must live in an area where these things are all over the place.
And there are traps, as I've discovered.
Yeah, they're total traps. They're total traps. Well, they're right by every right. But there's a bunch of them on Ashland Avenue. They're right near a public park or school.
They got me on Western, way up north.
But my point is anybody sitting there going, at the end of the day, with these 50 different ways, be it a parking meter, be it a parking downtown, being in any place, 50 different ways of grabbing money for all these people, are we reaching the point where we just can't take any more? I mean, I know the guy who used to buy the $20 downstairs every Saturday morning in my building when I lived at 70 West Huron. He'd buy a quart of Coke, two bags of Doritos, and he had like $16 left, and he gets 16 lottery tickets. You're getting everything from the guy. At some point, do you say, I just can't get any more out of this turnip that used to be a human being? And I think we're getting to that point, John. I really do. I mean,
Well, and now you got the city pushing a universal basic income for such people. So you got, you know, the possibility now of bankrupting people for all these promises and dreams of great wealth by playing the lotto, who are flat on their back, and now you got the city bailing them out. But that money's just going to go back into lottery tickets.
It's like a spin cycle. But I wonder.
At some level, it's a zero sum game, Tom.
It does. It becomes a total zero sum game. That's my point here. But yeah. I'm glad you. Go ahead. You conclude it. Because I'm talking too much.
You know, all of this involves taking the wealth of. You look at the district and carve up the state or the country any way you want. There's only so much wealth there at any given time, and it's always fluctuating. But if you price the people in that district out of their ability to live in that district, whatever you make, you know, for the moment, is ultimately out of the pockets of somebody who's disinclined to keep paying that money if they can go someplace else. So you're losing the possibility of long-term growth by nickeling and diming the people who only have so much to give. And when you decide this is how much you have to give for the privilege of living in Chicago or Illinois or whatever place, and it doesn't suit people's pocketbooks, they will go elsewhere. They may regret the choice down the road, and maybe someday they may even come back, or they'll have a summer home here or something else, but you're not going to get that money from them ad infinitum, and you can't blame people. So whatever you think you're going to make on gouging people farther is just a loss at the other end. So there's to me no growth here whatsoever. It's the same thing as promising that the Skyway would be paid by tolls, or that the Lotto would fix the problem with funding education. I mean, can you keep a straight face saying that stuff now? I mean,
man, do you think you could track down the guy who wrote the book about the lottery? I'd love to have him back on. How crooked it is!
Absolutely.
Just give me as a teaser, Jen. If they put one of those special games out there, and say there's three big winners out of 100,000, and the first three people are the first three winners, which of course isn't going to happen. But if it ever did, they continue to sell the rest of them, telling you there's three winners left. When there's no winners left. It's special. You could make fiction like this. I love it. S&P futures up 12. Nasdaq futures up 27. Good job, Eddie. Sorry for quizzing you so much earlier on a Monday morning, but what can I help you? You're my sports expert. What can I say? Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.